picking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game.
All right, welcome back. 17 minutes after the hour. Let's spend 10 good minutes with our NBA analyst extraordinaire, Mr. Henry Hayes. Henry, the marathon known as the NBA is, we can see the finish line. It's about to become a sprint with a maximum of 7 games. Does the NBA Finals go 7 games in your mind, my friend?
Well, you're going to hit me around the top with that, huh?
Yes.
My official prediction, Jordy, I think the Warriors in 6 in this one. I don't think it goes 7. But, it's an intriguing matchup for a lot of reasons. I think we're going to see the Warriors hold another one up in 6 games.
What is the difference between these clubs? Is it what is the difference? Why are you picking the Warriors?
Well, number one, I think you're in Toronto, and we see this a lot in the NBA historically. The team has not been there, and nobody on that roster, Kawhi Leonard's got some lengthy playoff experience, but I think there's a shock to the system when you get to the NBA Finals, and Toronto's fan base, as good as it is, I think actually this kind of hurts them because they're so tied into the success of that team. I think there's almost too much pressure, and then you put that up against Golden State, who frankly couldn't be more kind of calm, cool, and collected, A, because they've been there many, many years, 5 straight finals, B, they've won them, and then C, that's just who these guys are. Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, a little bit different Draymond, but they're just kind of laid back. No moment's going to be too big for these guys, road, home, down, up. So I just think all that combined, plus the fact that, the Raptors really, really rely heavily on Kawhi Leonard. Mm-hmm. So he's got to play A-plus for them to have a shot. And I think anything less than that, and they're going to be in trouble. If what I expect, Golden State's going to get one of the two at Toronto. They go back to the Bay Area and probably get 2 or 3, and they probably close it out in game 6.
Wouldn't it be fun if Toronto figured out a way to hold serve and all of a sudden we go back to Oakland and the Warriors are down 2-0-2? That would be, when's the last time the Warriors really had a lot of pressure on them? Was it as quickly as that game in Houston when Durant went down, or do we have to go back to last year against Houston? When did they face the most pressure in your mind?
No, to me, it was last year, Jordy. Look, Houston had a lead in their building in a game 7.
Yeah.
Forget about that. So, that's without Chris Paul in that game. So, I think win or lose, I think guys like Curry, they really have benefited from the volumes of games they've played with big time pressure, and they've won them, most of them. So I just think that they're not going to get unfazed, and if they go back to California 0-2, so be it. They'll make adjustments. I just think that, again, like I said, if you look at this playoff this year, having to rely on guys like Kyle Lowry, Siakam's hurt. He's not 100%. Gasol was a nice kind of mid-season add, but you don't know how much he can play in this series because if Golden State plays him small, Mark can't play. So I don't love Van Vliet. In fact, I think that's fool's gold what he did in Game 6, 6 and 7 against the Bucks. And so not to mention they've got a decision to make on how they guard Curry.
That was my next question. Who Lowry can't stay with Curry? Can he?
Well, in the last 3 years, Jordy, that's the majority of matchup that has happened. Now, I said that last 3 years, a couple things. That's Dwayne Casey's Toronto Raptors. So this is Nick Nurse's Toronto Raptors. So different deal. Here's the problem. Why don't you just put Kawhi Leonard on? Here's why. No one in the league, not one player in the league, runs more without the ball in his hand than Steph Curry. So to even keep up with him, much less effectively check him, you better be in top-notch physical condition. And then the Raptors are going to lean on Kawhi, I mean, Jordan, he's probably going to average 30 to 32 shots in the series per game.
He has to. He has to.
You can't. You simply have to make one of the choices. You can't do both. So I would expect to see Kawhi start on Iguodala and help big time off of him. And really, Andre's going to get a lot of open looks, as is Draymond Green on that pick and roll, because they've got to make choices. I mean, I just don't think. Now, what Nurse knows is, I think for the Warriors to win, I think Steph's got to shoot the ball a ton, too. So, you know, but again, at what price do you want to limit him? You know, it's not like Milwaukee where if you stop Giannis, which they did, then they get real limited pretty quickly. This team still got, you know, Klay Thompson scored 38 points in a quarter. So they've got plenty of other options. You know, the other really intriguing piece here to me, Jordy, is let's go back to the statement you made a minute ago. What if they go back to California down 0-2, the Warriors? And what if we hear that Kevin Durant's ready to play in Game 3?
Yeah.
You know, normally you'd say, well, gosh, you take the best player in the league anytime you can get him. But this isn't normal because clearly the Warriors play better against the Blazers. Now it's the Blazers, so I get it. But that was a different-looking team without him. Draymond Green was significantly better. Obviously, Klay and Steph get their touches. But, you know, it's interesting because I think it's a foregone conclusion and everyone in the league thinks that Durant's not long for California. And so all that kind of packaged into the fact that they still want to win this championship, it's really a fascinating subplot.
A lot of pressure on Steve Kerr. You got Boogie Cousins who's active. I mean, if he's going to play at all, it's going to be very, very, very marginal, and only if Marc Gasol's on the court, because he just can't do anything else at this point in time. And to your point, if Durant says, "Hey, coach, I'm ready to go," there's chemistry. There's all kind of things involved in this thing. Henry Hayes, kind enough to join us. He's picking the Warriors in six to win their third straight NBA title. LSU basketball, a bunch of players came back to the fold as we expected. They lose Cavell Bigby-Williams to eligibility. He had serviced his time. Naz Reid opts to stay in the draft pool, as does Tremont Waters. After the NBA combine, what have you heard about their status in the eyes of the general managers around the league?
Yeah, so at a high level, Waters rising, Reid dropping. And we can take them one by one. So Waters did measure right at 5'11", which is a little surprising, in bare feet. And so it's a little easier to make a comp for him to play. His jump shot, I think, is better than the NBA scouts had expected it to be. And his ability to make plays for others has also been something that they've really taken notice of. Now, look, we've always said Tremont's going to be, you know, today's NBA, Tremont, that's a tough guy to keep in front of you. For, I don't care how good of a defender you are. So that wasn't a concern. So I think that combined with, if you say, okay, if he can be a reliable knockdown shooter, you know, maybe some, and I said this, I've always said this, somebody in the right system can find a way to play that kid 10 to 12 minutes of games. But it's got to be their system right way. A Popovich, a Stevens, someone like that who's been around Carlisle, maybe in Dallas. So, you know, situation's big for Tremont. On the other side, Nas, you know, measured him a 6'9.5", which, you know, it's one thing if you're Giannis, who's a legit 7 feet. And it's another thing if you're 6'9.5". And I say that because so far the knock on Nas is a little slow, a little heavy-footed for that size.
Not explosive. And
not an athlete trying to make plays on the perimeter, which we all saw. He's not. Now there's not a back-to-the-basket low-post player. So, you know, that combined with the fact that Nas is going to have some defensive shortcomings early in his career. He's just going to that's just an easy way to say it. He's going to have to really dig in to learn how the NBA plays team defense and rotations and, you know, ball hedges and all those things. So I think, you know, again, best case for him, he does catch a first-round, back end of the first round, which is so important because it's a guaranteed 3 years. And being at the bottom of the first round, that means a good team is picking you, which also means he doesn't have to play early. So like a Philadelphia, a Milwaukee, a Toronto, something like that, where you know you don't need to come in and play a bunch of minutes. But if he slides to the second round, You know, all that means is you get an invite to the camp. So, fluid process, we'll see. But that's the early feedback.
Okay. Henry Hayes, kind enough to join us. One last quick one. You still high on the Clippers with Anthony Davis, or is Brooklyn starting to sway your mind a little bit?
Yeah, you know, I think L.A. is still, in my mind, Jordy, the front runner, and here's why. I really do believe that it's a done deal that Kawhi Leonard is going to be in a Clippers jersey next year. I also believe that Clutch Sports is bound determined to get Anthony Davis to Los Angeles. Now, I didn't say as a Laker. I just said to Los Angeles.
Los Angeles, right.
And ironically, or maybe not ironically, boy, I never thought I'd say the Los Angeles Clippers ownership structure is much more stable than the Los Angeles Lakers structure.
No question.
If you're Team Davis and you say you've got a 8-year-old Kawhi Leonard versus a 35-year-old LeBron James, moving forward in the franchise, you can make a case where, you know, that's a pretty good path forward. So what does that mean? That means that if you're Team Davis and you're fielding calls from general managers who are deciding to make a run at Davis, you got to ask them, hey, is your guy going to sign with us? And they're going to say, no. If you trade for us, we'll be there for a year and we will leave.
Yeah.
And he will be an unrestricted free agent at the end of that year. So, look, that's why I've said all along, Ainge isn't getting him because he's not giving up Tatum, Brown, those picks for
a one-year deal.
He's not doing it. Yeah. So that's
Henry
why I
Hayes.
Don't think that.
Sorry, buddy.
Clippers are number one.
We're out of time, man. We could talk all day, but I'm out of time. Got to take a break, man. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Enjoy the finals tonight, and we'll talk soon.
Take care, brother.
You take care. That's Henry Hayes, kind enough to join us. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll talk all things LSU. Cody Worsham next for the Jordy Helfrich Show.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
And welcome back. Great to be with you. Time to talk all things LSU with our good friend, the director of digital media. He's here, he's there, he's everywhere. The one and only Cody Worsham. Cody, good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
Doing well, Jordy. Good to be back on with you.
Yes, indeed. It's been a while. We greatly appreciate it. It's amazing. We've got a Baton Rouge Regional getting ready to start up in baseball. We've got spring meetings going on in Destin. I just want to talk LSU basketball because, boy, there's a lot on the table with hoops, including Will Wade met with the national media on Tuesday basically to talk about his suspension and all the events that transpired since then. Then he met with local media yesterday, and he talked basketball. And I kind of just want to talk basketball. And I'm thrilled for one Tasman Mitchell, who's been elevated to a full-time assistant coach. Good for him.
Yeah, it couldn't happen to a better guy. Tasman bleeds purple and gold. You know, he was one of the great players to ever come through LSU. He saw basically every peak and valley that you could in a career at LSU with the way that they make a Final Four run in 06. He gets injured and misses the season. They win an SEC championship in 09. There's some rough years mixed in there, but he kind of went through it all and was always consistent and was always – just a guy that represented LSU the right way. And then he comes back and he works in this role that he's worked in the last couple of years, this administrative role, and just puts his heart and soul into it. And for him to get this job is just awesome. I think he's going to be a great recruiter for LSU. Who better to talk to about going to LSU than him? And he's a guy that obviously has a lot of knowledge with how to play the game, both as a big man. He can help coach the bigs, which is kind of what Tony Benford did a little bit along with Will Wade. But he can also work with perimeter guys because he developed that part of his game throughout his career, too. So I think he's a great addition to the staff.
Yeah. Louisiana born and bred, climbed up the charts both in scoring and rebounding at LSU. As you mentioned, goes to a Final Four, wins an SEC championship, goes and plays a hiccup in the NBA, goes and plays overseas. But he's still young enough where he can relate to the players. I think it's a brilliant move. I did not know that Will Wade had never had an associate head coach, but Greg Hire moves up, and Will said, look, the guy's relentless. He deserved it. I didn't know that Will had never had one before.
Yeah, GH is he's awesome. I mean, he really took on a large role. I mean, he's always had a large role with Will since he came here from Wichita State. The story that I always tell is I got wind of, you know, back in my beat reporting days, I got wind that LSU was trying to get Hire over to LSU, and so I made a couple calls. And one of the people that I talked to that wasn't really affiliated with LSU but just kind of a college basketball person said, look, that'd be an amazing Hire, but there's no way that they're getting Greg Hire to LSU to be an assistant. The next job he takes, he's going to be a head coach, and he's going to be a head coach at a good mid-major school. And here we are, you know, two, three years later, and he's still on staff with LSU. That's the kind of mind that he has. He's a basketball genius. I mean, if you talk hoops with him for 5 seconds, you realize that. So he deserves every promotion that he could get in the book. And the longer LSU can keep him on staff, the better, because not only is he a fantastic basketball coach, he's a bloodhound on the recruiting trail, as Will Wade has said before. He just goes and gets guys. So I think he's one of the best assistant coaches in the country. And I think that comes from a pretty, you know, I may be biased in my own senses, but I think a lot of people around the country would agree with that.
Cody Worsham, LSU Digital Media Director, kind enough to join us. You lose Cavell, Bigby Williams, Nasri, Tremont Waters, as expected, stay into the NBA draft process. Everybody else comes back. It was, I'm sure, a great experience for all of them. I'm dying to know what they have been told by the hierarchy as to what they need to do, what they need to work on to get better, to have a better chance of playing in the league and staying in the league. But it certainly bodes well for LSU that they are coming back. Now you've got a nucleus, and I'm really excited about LSU basketball yet again.
Yeah, I mean, I was talking to a friend about this, and this is basically the team that they're bringing back is basically the team that beat Tennessee to win the SEC championship, minus Cavell Bigby Williams, which is a big minus.
That's right.
That's the guy that they're going to have to figure out how to replace. His rim protection, his defensive versatility was invaluable to LSU. But you know, you think of Tremont Waters and Naz Reid as the two guys that have left early. They didn't really. I mean, Naz played in that game, but he only scored a point, and Tremont didn't play. So there's a core of talent here that I think is really good. That I think you can build. You know, it may not be an SEC championship team, but it's got the bones of an SEC championship team. If they can develop some things or some guys can take bigger steps forward this year, then I think they've got a chance. But I like a lot of the guys they bring back. I think Javonte is going to be in for a really big year next year. I think he's just going to take a huge leap from his freshman year to his sophomore year and sort of play the way that he did when Tremont was out, which was fantastic. I don't remember the exact numbers, but I think he was averaging around 17 or 18 points a game. I think Skyler's going to shoot the ball better. And then I think guys like, you know, Darius Days, I think he could really develop well. And then I like this recruiting class. You know, everyone talks about Trenton Wofford, and I think he's a really good player. Well, sleep on James Bishop. He's one of the most efficient guards that LSU has recruited for a very, very long time. At the EYBL level, he was as efficient as you can be as a guard. He shot, you know, 50% from the floor, 40% from three. 85% from the line and just got buckets against everybody, the best players in the country. So I think he's going to be a bucket getter that comes in and gives you a real offensive punch. So I like this team. They got to add a couple more pieces, but I really like them.
Yeah, they need some size. There's no question about that. You mentioned the loss of Cavell Bigby Williams and how valuable he was around the rim. So I've been told they're in on some bigs in the JUCO ranks, and maybe there's a transfer portal guy that can come in, but they need some size. But I'm curious, you got to see the kid. Tell me about Andre Hyatt, because Will Wade said, I mean, he raved about the kid, talking to local reporters about what a great shooter he is. Please get me up to speed on Andre Hyatt.
Andre came in last year. He was supposed to be a part of this year's recruiting class. He was a 2019 kid that reclassified late into the 2018 class. He had a knee injury coming in, so he was a little bit slow to start. He wasn't in the shape that he needed to be. But he's a guy that I think from the first day they practiced to the last day they practiced improved about as much as anybody. If you go back to the NCAA tournament when LSU was running scout teams to prepare for Yale, he was the guy that gave them the look of Mione, who you know, of course, now is in the NBA draft process, and who LSU did a phenomenal job guarding. And I remember asking Greg Heyer after that game, I said, what kind of look did Hyatt give you? And he said, well, he got more buckets against us than Oney did. So he can play. I mean, he can shoot it. He's got a real nice stroke. He's got a big body. He can get in the paint and mix it up a little bit. He's still got to develop athletically and physically, but I've seen some videos of him this offseason really getting after it in that regard. I think he's going to be a big help to this team. I don't know what role. I don't know if he comes in and is, you know, instant offense for you. I don't know if he comes in and maybe take some time to develop, and maybe it's a guy we're looking at 2 or 3 years down the road that's a big-time scorer for you. We'll just see. We'll see how he develops this summer. But I love his attitude. I love his work ethic. I think he's a great personality for this team. And he was very, very highly coveted coming out of high school and did some really nice things on the EYBL level. So I think he's a guy that can really help LSU.
Cody Worsham, kind enough to join us. We know the Tigers are going to be traveling to Spain. That's not a bad gig. But we also now know that their annual Thanksgiving trek will take them again out of Baton Rouge, and they're heading to Jamaica into Montego Bay for the Jersey Mike's Jamaica Classic. I don't know who's in the thing, but anytime you can go to the beach, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully they'll get me over there too, and I can provide some coverage. Just strictly work-related. I have no other interest in being there.
Just wanting
to keep working for LSU. But, yeah, they've got a really nice non-conference schedule coming together. I don't know how much is – I've seen a lot of it reported. I know they've got a game in Los Angeles scheduled at some point next season. They're going to Jamaica. They'll be in Spain this summer, which I need to figure out how I can get on that trip as well. Again, just strictly work-related. But it's another really good schedule, and I think it's one that Will Wade has kind of mastered the art of scheduling. It's going to be a good mixture of interesting destinations, places that fans, if they want to travel, can go to and have a good time. Yeah. But also, you know, high-quality opponents that LSU should be able to compete with and or beat, but also will give LSU that nice punch in the arm and give them that high RPI next year come tournament time.
CBS came out with their early 25-1 preseason college basketball poll. There's a lot of SEC teams in it, and LSU, despite losing Williams and Reed and Waters, they come in at number 25 after that 28-7 record. Is that where you expected them, or is that a little bit low, a little bit high? What do you think?
I think right around there. I think this is a team that's going to hover in and around the top 25 going into the season, just because you do lose Tremont and Nas and Cavell. And I think, you know, replacing Tremont is going to be very difficult, but I think they're just going to do it in a different way. They're going to go bigger there. I think Watford kind of gives you a lot of the same things that Nas. Again, in a different way, not quite the shooter that Nas is, but I think it's a little bit better. Put it on the floor, go into the basket. I think it'll be a similar rebounder. And then I think Cavell's the big one. You know, you got to figure out how you replace his rim protection and defensive versatility, and whether that's where the like for like, if you go recruit somebody, or if Cortese Cooper comes in, a guy that they had redshirting last year, and he can protect the rim a little bit, or if Emmett Williams can take a bigger role as a rim protector, or if you just kind of change your defensive system and you're not as reliant on it. But that's going to be, you know, that's going to be the keys. All that said, you bring back three of your top five scorers. You bring back a really good backcourt in Javonte Smart and Skylar Mays, maybe as good as any in the SEC. And so when you've got those kinds of building blocks with the versatility of a Darius Days, with a top 25 recruit in Trinan Walker, with some of the pieces they bring back, I think that has you right there. You know, not in the top 10, not in the top 15, but you'll be a competitive top 25 team who would expect to get in that large berth next year.
How about a team that gets up and down the floor? They're not very big, but the LSU's version of the Golden State Warriors death squad, if they can just knock down some shots from the perimeter, you start Smart and Mays in the backcourt, Marlon Taylor and Days on the wings, and Emmett Williams in the middle, and just go run and go have some. That's a pretty good club. Not bad.
Yeah, you know, you can look at some of the teams that Will Wade had at BCU where they played the Havoc style of defense and they pressed a lot. You know, nine or ten guys, and maybe this team can do that. Maybe they play a little bit more up-tempo. I do think with Skyler and Javonte, you're going to have two guards that just don't turn the ball over very much. And I think that's going to be a huge advantage. If you don't turn the ball over much and you shoot rebound as well as LSU did, offensive rebounding they bring back with Emmett and Darius in particular, I think it's a team that can give some people some problems. So all those pieces come together.
A fun team to watch. Switching to baseball real quick. I didn't expect it, but I love the message that Paul Maneri gave to his team subliminally by saying, we're going with Landon Marceau. He's been our best pitcher of late. We're not overlooking Stony Brook. We're going with him. I love the message sent. I really do.
Yeah, I mean, you can't overlook that game. And, I think it's interesting because Marceau's been great for the last 30 innings. If you look back to his Lamar appearance, his ERA is around 2.40, which is very, very good. His hits and walks have been a little high. And so I think what throwing him on Friday does, you would expect your offense to get a few runs against Stony Brook. It just gives him a little bit of wiggle room. If he does give up a couple hits early, if he does walk a couple guys early, it gives him just a little bit of breathing room. And then on Saturday, you can either come back with Cole Henry, who is the ace of the staff, or Eric Walker, who has pitched well at home in big games for LSU. I think that's kind of a win-win situation. So you have to get off to a strong start. Marceau's been probably your best and most consistent pitcher for the last few weeks, but you still got guys behind him that can win the game. So I don't think there's enough separation between Marceau and Walker and Henry in terms of the bigger picture over the last few weeks. I don't think there's enough separation to where one guy is clearly the right choice Friday, one guy is clearly the right choice Saturday. I think you just have to come out strong and get that first win under your belt.
I agree.
Because if you lose that first, you're in trouble. And so you just got to come out and win it.
Yeah, Marceau, to your point, he's allowed just 3 earned runs over his last 18 and two-thirds innings. That's a 1.45 ERA. All 3 starts, all 3 LSU wins. So we'll see. Before I let you go, the NBA Finals begin. So who you got?
Yeah, it's going to be hard for me to pick against the Warriors. The way that they're going, even without KD, and it's been good without Steph the last couple of years. I like what Toronto does defensively. There is maybe a feeling of the 04, 05 Finals, the year that I guess it must have been 04 when Detroit took it from LA. LA was trying to kind of make that fourth in a row at that point. And
Shaq wasn't happy.
Yeah, just running out of gas, and there was tension all year. Maybe some of that comes into play, but I don't know. The way that they've been playing without KD, this kind of joyful way that Steph plays and they play off of him, I would be a fool to pick against Golden State. So I'll stick with them, and if Toronto surprises me, then credit to them.
For coming on my show, our show so often, when I'm going to get a couple of tickets, I'm going to bring you down to New Orleans. We're going to be up close and personal to Zion. You're in?
Absolutely. We'll never pass up an opportunity to see that guy play in person.
All right. You got it, my friend. It's a done deal. Thank you so much, as always. I know we talked a lot of LSU basketball, but, man, they made some noise all week long, and it was all good noise, and I'm really optimistic again about LSU basketball for the upcoming season. Should be a lot of fun. Cody, thank you. All the best to your family, and have a great weekend.
Thank you, Jordan.
All right, buddy, you take care. We'll come back, and we'll wrap up our number one, set the stage for our number two. Can Drake control himself tonight? There ain't no way. He's going to be all over the Warrior. Or is he? Because he loves him some Durant and Curry. Durant's not going to play. We'll see. Just one of the subplots of the NBA Finals. We'll be right back.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, and on the app.
Oh, I'm getting fired up. Baton Rouge Regional. Saints right around the corner. LSU football right around the corner. The Raging Cajuns right around the corner. It's going to be great. Taysom Hill was the guest speaker at the Bayou Preps Banquet in Thibodaux the other day. And he made this quote, and I just love it. I just love it. He said, quote, "My goal is to be the eventual successor to Drew Brees and improve as a passer. But right now, all I want to do is help the Saints win. I'm working more now at wide receiver, in the slot, improving as a route runner, at halfback, and I'm working on special teams." So we're going to see much more of Taysom Hill. He just adds that weapon, that, and the players love him because he's tough. He's willing to do whatever it takes to help a team win. Love Taysom Hill. And he came out and said about Mike Thomas. He said, anyone can see how talented Mike Thomas is, but what most don't see is his work ethic. His attention to detail. He runs routes in practice like in games to get his timing down. His competitive nature and his winning attitude are unreal. Man, I'm fired up about the Saints. I think it's going to be a tremendous, tremendous, tremendous year. But that's down the road. That is down the road. First and foremost, we've got the Baton Rouge Regional. Hey, shout out to Southern University, who will be heading to Starkville in the Starkville Regional. They'll take on the number one seed, Mississippi State Bulldogs. It'll be an early exit for Southern University, but, hey, they won the SWAC, and good for them to get in. They can use all the money they can to help fund that athletic department. Let me tell you what's coming up as we set the stage for hour number two. Hot topics first out the gate as we come back from break. Wilson Alexander of The Advocate at Alec Box Stadium, Skip Bertman Field, watch the Tigers work out. We'll share his thoughts on the decision for Landon Marceau. We'll talk about Stony Brook, and we'll talk about this Baton Rouge Regional, who Baseball America has as the toughest of the 16 regionals out there, the toughest. And I think it's all because of who's the number two seed, and even more so, who's the number three seed. Arizona State 2, Southern Miss 3. Makes it a really, really tough one. And then we'll bring on for the first time, I really respect his work, Ali Cassell with At the Bird Rights. And we'll talk more about Anthony Davis isn't coming back to the Pelicans. I just don't see it happening. I'd be more shocked at that than the Pelicans winning the lottery. I really would. The draft lottery. And we'll talk all about that with Ali. It's all coming your way. Hour number two, straight ahead. Don't go anywhere. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, your source for LSU sports, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. Come on back.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pulled off another miracle.
This is Acadiana's sports station, 103.7 The Game.
Touchdown, New
Streaming live on the 103.7 The Game mobile app and online at 103.7thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 103.7 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
Welcome. If you're just joining us, great to be with you. If you stuck around, this is our number two, the Jordy Helfrich Show, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, from the 237 Roof Studios on the campus of Delta Media, KLWB 103.7 The Game. A busy second hour plan, but I begin with, we heard some highlights of the Astros-Cubs game last night, and a young fan at the game was struck by an Albert Almora Jr. foul ball, taken to the hospital, shaking up the Chicago center fielder, and now the calls have been renewed for adding additional protective netting at major league ballparks. It's a no-brainer. Just do it from foul pole to foul pole. If I'm bringing my kids to the ballpark, I'm either sitting behind home plate or I'm sitting in the outfield. I'm not sitting down the first and third baseline. Not doing it. Attention span is too limited. The balls are coming off these bats so fast. I mean, in the blink of an eye, there you go. It just makes no sense. What is it going to take to do it? There's over 1,000 people that get injured at baseball games during the course of one regular season and playoffs. What is it going to take before this gets done? You can see through the netting. You really can. Even the baseball purist in a game full of purists believes in the same thing. Get it done. Put up the netting and protect your patrons. Please. Without further ado, let's take our daily walk around the sports water cooler. CD, button please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
Are you in agreement, CD, about the netting?
Oh, I'm in total agreement with you, Jordy. In fact, that was kind of going to be where I started off on Hot Topics.
Okay.
You know, you definitely.
Sorry about that.
It's all good, Jordy. It's all good. Because trust me, there's plenty of hot topics to kind of kick around, Jordy. I think the biggest one has to be something interesting that kind of has popped up over the last couple hours with Browns head coach Freddie Kitchens maybe cooking up a little controversy with Odell Beckham Jr. He's saying that he missed a lot skipping OTAs, missed a lot of the offense. He's definitely calling out OBJ for missing out on most of the squad's organized team activities. I think that definitely could wind up being a step in the wrong direction for Odell Beckham Jr. He probably wants to kind of reshape his image a little bit. At least is what I think.
Yeah, well, look, all that will go down the tube as soon as Odell makes that first catch from Baker Mayfield and gets a touchdown. That'll all be in the wash. Look, these are OTAs. I don't know. Look, just put the pads on when it counts. And let's see what he does then. You know, I mean, this is not the first, won't be the last. Yep. Is he a prima donna in some ways? Yes. Is he multi-skilled and talented? Yes. You take talent over anything else, Odell will be fine. And Freddie Kitchens will be calling his number early and often when it counts.
I'd have to agree with you, Jordy. It's definitely going to be interesting to see what he winds up doing once he gets in there. And I'm just looking forward to seeing what he does for the Cleveland Browns in 2019, yeah. Along with all the weapons that they have.
No doubt. We'll
move on over to the NBA, Jordy. We'll save the NBA Finals talk for a little bit later. But, of course, I think we got to talk about Zion Williamson signing with the CAA. How huge is that to have him sign up with that company rather than, you know, that bleep show called Clutch Sports?
Yeah, that's a joke. It's so good. He is setting his own path. He doesn't want to be in the same path as LeBron James. He wants to set his own course. How'd you like to be the agent in charge of that and just get your commission off the shoe deal?
How good of
a deal?
Ooh.
It's gonna be, I mean, you're set. That's $100 million easy for Zion. He went with the most reputable, the biggest, the most experienced when it comes to NBA players. So good for Zion. And all you national writers and all you people that keep down in the Crescent City, calling it a bad place, you shouldn't go play there. Sorry. He's not going back to Duke. He signed with an agency. He's going to be the Pelicans pick, and it's going to be wonderful. So y'all just shut your traps and go on and do something else.
Exactly, Jordy. It's probably the best thing that the NBA can have right now is to have the New Orleans Pelicans still be competitive with a guy like Zion Williamson and all the talent they have around him. You can about imagine you wind up getting some really good stuff as well if Anthony Davis, the meeting with him, doesn't necessarily go the way you expect it to, because you know you'd be working with a lot of trade partners down the line to try and get AD out of there, but also get a whole hell of a lot of value. I think it's just going to be great all the way around.
I got thinking about that, and we'll discuss it. I think David Griffin already knows that Anthony Davis doesn't want to come back. I think what he's trying to weigh out is, look, if we cut a deal with Brooklyn, are you gonna sign up with them, or is it just L.A. that you want to go to? And by L.A., I mean Los Angeles.
Yep.
Does it matter, the Lakers or the Clippers? We got to get the best and the most we can for you. So tell me what you're thinking so when we go to talk to the other GM of these other teams, we can say, look, this is just going to be a one-year deal and he's going to leave after 1 year. Or, yes, he's willing to sign the max contract with you. So I think that's where the meetings are going, to be honest with you.
I have to agree with you, Jordy. I think it definitely will wind up being more along the lines of trying to figure out where exactly you fit in the entire situation And I think it's going to be interesting to see where we wind up going with Anthony Davis, where he's going to wind up going with the franchise, what you get out of it.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right, Jordy, hopping over to the baseball diamond for a minute. We got to talk about LSU baseball. Landon Marceau going to wind up getting the start, and that definitely causes a lot of intrigue. How much confidence does that put in Palmieri's mind of a guy like Cole Henry in a potential game where you're going to be either fighting to survive or you're going to be fighting to punch your ticket to the regional final?
Yeah, that's a great point and a great question. I think, and I said this earlier, and I really believe, I think he's sending a message to his team. Hey, we're going with our hottest picture, and Landon Marceau has been their hottest picture. He's allowed just 3 earned runs over his last 18 and two-thirds innings. That's a 1.45 ERA. All 3 starts, all 3 LSU wins. He's saying, we're not overlooking Stony Brook. We can't overlook anybody. We're going to win, and we're going to try and win now. And then we'll cross the bridge of game 2 when that comes. So I love the message being sent, but you're right. Amps up the pressure if LSU doesn't take care of business on Friday. No question about it. Well said.
All right, Jordy, moving over to the world of college basketball for a minute. I think obviously one of the big topics nationally is Juwan Howard had his big press conference recently, and he wants to kind of start mending the ties between the basketball program and a lot of the members of his former teammates, the Fab Five back in the 90s. How great is that to kind of start rebuilding that culture and having these guys, these Fab Five guys, around a lot of the younger guys to help them develop and really know what it's like to be around greatness?
That's very smart by Juwan Howard. All that is trying to get recruits. Jalen Rose, Chris Webber have national platforms. Kids see them. So that's all about that. And look, in any program, you want your former players to come back and have an active role. Some LSU basketball coaches didn't want to have anything to do with such nonsense in their mind. The ones that have been successful are the ones that bring back the players. And so I commend Juwan Howard for doing that. But Jalen Rose ain't suiting up. Chris Webber ain't suiting up. King ain't suiting up. So it's all about trying to get recruits to come back to Chrysler Arena and make Michigan a viable national commodity when it comes to hoops yet again.
Looking forward to seeing what's going to happen there, and it's kind of a perfect segue to talk about Tasmon Mitchell getting promoted up to assistant coach, taking that third assistant position. That's just a great step in the right direction for a guy that was part of that last Final Four team for LSU.
That's a great pay raise, I can tell you that much. He's in another bracket now, but that good for him. He spent 2 years as a assistant role, kind of a director of player development kind of a role, and now he gets to go out and recruit and do all the things. We wish him nothing but the best. All right, Clint, there's your Hot Topics, brought to you by the best hot sauce. That is Cajun Chef Hot Sauce. Do yourself a flavor. Bring a small bottle of Cajun Chef Hot Sauce with you wherever you go, because everything tastes better with Cajun Chef on it. We'll go back to Alec Box Stadium, Skip Bertman Field, Wilson Alexander, the latest for the Baton Rouge Regional. Next on the Jordy Helfrich Show.
Hey, this.
There's only one place you'll find all of the movers, the shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Helfrich Show. On 103.7 The Game.
Hey, welcome back. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. All 4 teams in the Baton Rouge Regional had their 1 hour and 15-minute practice session today. LSU started things off at 10 o'clock. They finished, obviously, at 11:15. Then Palmieri met with the media, and the big question in everybody's mind was who's going to be the starter against Stony Brook on Friday at 6 o'clock. Wilson Alexander of The Advocate covers the Tiger baseball team. He was there, and he learned the word first-handedly. Wilson, thanks for the time, buddy. How are you?
I'm good, Jordy. How are you doing today?
I'm terrific. So I didn't expect the name Landon Marceau. I thought maybe first game you'd want your more experienced pitcher in Eric Walker, but it's not. It's Landon Marceau. What was the reasoning that Paul gave behind choosing him to start things off?
Paul basically didn't want anybody on his team or really anyone to overlook Stony Brook. He wanted to kind of come out there and I think really, you know, put their best foot forward in game one. And Landon's been pitching so well recently that they decided to go with him. Definitely was a little bit surprising. I think a lot of people expected, like kind of like you mentioned, Eric Walker. But he doesn't want to take Stony Brook lightly. And so he's, you know, putting out one of his best arms.
Okay, so you've got Marceau pitching on Friday, and then I would imagine since he doesn't want any attention diverted from Stony Brook, if I know Paul like I think I do, he didn't say if Cole Henry or Eric Walker were going to pitch next. I think both of them will pitch, but whatever order it is, we don't know yet.
Right, yeah, he didn't reveal the rest of the weekend. It'll probably kind of depend on how this first game goes.
Okay,
I would expect Cole Henry, but nothing set in stone really yet.
What have you heard about this current Stony Brook team? We all remember 2012 Super Regional. It's a different LSU team, obviously. It's a different Stony Brook team. But anybody that gets in the tournament's got to be pretty darn good. What have you learned about their club?
So they won their conference, the American East, to get here. They slept through their conference tournament to, you know, get back into the tournament, I think, for the sixth time in their history. And they've got an infielder named Nick Grande who's pretty good. He's got 19 stolen bases this year. He's got a pretty high batting average. They don't hit for a lot of power. They've got one guy with 10 homers, another guy, a couple of guys with five. But Paul had mentioned, you know, that kind of, you know, they can still hit the ball out of the yard if you don't make a good pitch. And so they're probably, you know, kind of your typical Northeastern team. They're a pretty scrappy bunch, and they're going to come down here because I'm sure they're well aware of 2012, so they're going to be coming down here with a lot of confidence they're not going to shy away from the task at hand.
Did Paul say they remind him of some team maybe that LSU has already played this year? You talk about a scrappy team. I'm thinking Southeastern or one of these in-state schools.
No, he didn't liken them to any team, really. He just sort of, you know, based on what his experience facing Northeastern teams, having, you know, coached at Notre Dame, he kind of figured, you know, he watched the selection show, watched them get selected, and, you know, they all, he mentioned, wearing the same shirts and jumping up and, you know, when it happened, and that he thinks they're pretty disciplined, is what Paul said.
All right, Wilson Alexander, the Advocate, LSU versus Stony Brook, game two of the Baton Rouge Regional starting at 6 p.m. Game one, Arizona State versus Southern Miss. Boy, those are two really good 2-seed, 3-seed matchup teams there. You've been following LSU all season long. Boy, it's been a roller coaster ride, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Paul called it one of the most challenging seasons of his career.
I can only imagine not knowing, you know, when you wake up in the morning who's going to be hurt, who's not going to be hurt, who can you count on to get the ball and throw you four or five, maybe six innings. That has got to be difficult. But you have watched them now evaluate their play of late. I thought they were very good in the SEC tournament.
Yeah, I mean, it sort of goes into kind of what I'm writing about today, which is how they turned this thing around. Because, I mean, three-ish weeks ago, you know, up at Arkansas, I mean, after that game two loss, they had lost five in a row, which hasn't happened a lot here. And they were frustrated. There was pressure just building and building and building. They're like, what's going on? Like, they're questioning themselves, trying to figure this thing out. And then they come out in game three. Landon Marceau gives them a solid start. Antoine Duplantis hits the home run. Todd Peterson closes it out. They get a win and everything. Like, that pressure bubble just bursts. And they're able to relax and say, okay, you know, the losing streak's over, we can kind of move forward. And ever since then, they've been playing a lot better. The pitching staff was great during the SEC tournament. Mm-hmm. They're healthy for the first time really since, like, February. Like, they've got they're about as healthy as they could be right now because Brant Broussard's going to be able to play this weekend. So is Trent Bittmeyer, who made an incredible recovery over the last couple weeks. So they've got pretty much everyone available who they expected to have, you know, available. I mean, obviously Jaden Hill is still out, but they're about as set up as well right now as they possibly could be for this regional. And they, you can see it on them. They're playing loose. They're having fun again. They're just enjoying this time right now because they're playing better.
Yeah, that's awesome. Wilson Alexander, the Advocate, LSU versus Stony Brook, of course, coming up Friday. You mentioned the Arkansas game as maybe that game three, the turning point of the season. Was the down, was the rock bottom, the midweek loss to Louisiana Tech?
I don't know. The rock bottom was kind of just that fifth straight loss.
Okay.
Was sort of what the players had said, that, you know, okay, it's like, where this is going to end. And then then the next day they came out and they won. And they were getting out of Arkansas, which is a national seed, with at least one win was really huge for LSU.
You know, when you talk about these other teams in the regional, you ask about Arizona State, oh, they're the best home run hitting team in the country. Southern Miss, they got a couple of good players. They can take it out the ballpark as well. You mentioned Stony Brook, scrappy, disciplined, excited to be here. What do teams say about LSU? Well, how would you describe this team?
Well, I don't know what other teams think of LSU much, but are you asking how I think LSU is?
Uh-huh.
I think LSU is a team that can make a run because they've got the talent. We've seen, you know, there's a reason they were the number one team by a couple of different polls coming into the season. It's a talented group that's underperformed this year for a variety of reasons. Injuries, I think, being, you know, first and foremost. They could never get a rhythm because everybody was hurt all the time. And that was definitely tough. It's tough to play through that. But now that they're healthy again, I think they're a team that can be pretty dangerous. I saw a projection that, you know, I think it was either Baseball America or D1, something like that, had them as their one of the eight teams going to Omaha. You know, they're wow, a team that can make a run here at the end because LSU's done it before and they're playing better. But it's not going to be an easy regional to get out of. I think those Baseball America that named it, the hardest regional out there of the 16. So they're going to have their work cut out for them. But if they play as well as they're able to, you know, they can get out of here and at least get to the Supers.
And if they get to the Supers, not putting the old proverbial cart before the horse, they would in all likelihood have to face Georgia. Palmieri said in losing two out of three there, it was the closest – one of the closest, hard-fought, best series he's been a part of. I think the games were decided by two runs or less, so that I guess they feel pretty comfortable and confident having to go against maybe the best pitching staff in the league.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I was at that Georgia series, and it was pretty incredible. I mean, Zach Hess had his best start of his career to win Game One, beat Emerson Hancock, who's one of the best pitchers in the league, really in the country. And then Game Two was super, super close. Cole Henry gave them an incredible start, and the bats just never picked up. And then in Game Three, LSU was down pretty big and started to come back late, and the comeback fell just a little bit short. It would be an exciting regional, exciting super regional if that ended up being the matchup out there in Athens.
It would be great. You mentioned Cole Henry. What did you think of his performance, first time out of the chute after the injury, coming back and pitching in the SEC tournament?
He certainly didn't pitch the way that he was before, you know, that he started feeling discomfort in his arm. LSU's explanation for that was that he wasn't using his secondary pitchers much at all. He threw about 90% fastballs. And so then South Carolina was able to, you know, recognize that after an inning and jump on his fastball. And he wasn't as effective. But it's been interesting. I mean, LSU doesn't seem too worried about that. I think they seem to think that he'll be able to get back to the form he had in the middle of the season. Whenever he pitches during this regional, and because he'll probably be able to use his full complement of pitches. He said that, you know, over the last week of side sessions that he's been able to find his curveball again, and that pitch was just absolutely lights out during most of the season.
Yeah. I guess the best news was that Vetmeyer is back because he was pitching very, very well prior to going on the shelf.
It's definitely good news and for LSU. I mean, I don't think he was incredible, but he was a pretty reliable arm.
Reliable,
they used him. Yeah, they trusted him a little bit. He was used a lot. And that just gives them even more bullpen depth. I mean, he's probably not going to be able to go, you know, maybe more than an inning or two. He's been on the shelf for a couple of weeks, but just to give them another option out of the bullpen is huge.
Well, we've talked about it all season long. This is about as healthy as LSU's been all season long, and it couldn't come at a better time. So we look forward to your articles in theadvocate.com. Have fun at the box, man, and let's keep the rain away and let's see what happens. Don't lose two, right? Just stay in the winner's bracket.
That's all they got to do.
That's it. Wilson, thank you, buddy. Take care.
Thank you, Jordy. Have a great day.
So, again, LSU will be game two Friday. Opening game, Arizona State versus Southern Miss at 12 noon. And then the LSU game, if everything goes according to plan, pregame show at 5:30, first pitch at 6 o'clock. Every LSU game in the Baton Rouge Regional right here on 103.7 The Game. It may even go as far as Monday, depending upon how the bracket plays out. So stay tuned, wait and see. But the Baton Rouge Regional getting underway. We'll take a timeout here. When we come back, more NBA talk. Pelicans AD Ali Cassell joins us at the Bird Rights next.
Your NBC Sports Radio update starts now.
I hear me.